This is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it is a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. And before I get into all the news stories here, Sean DeTore, I can't believe I've not talked with you yet about the cover story in Pacific Magazine in the Seattle Times on Sunday. I trust you saw it.
I did see it, yes. I haven't had a chance to read it, but I did see it.
A look at Seattle's exciting pinball present and sketchy past. And since you are the most avid current pinball player that I know, you have to read it. It's fascinating.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that I know that have shared the article on Facebook, people that are in the community. And I'm really glad that the pinball community is getting recognized. It's just every year seems to be growing and expanding, and it's really great.
See, I was part of that community when it was seedy, and they talk about that. But I didn't realize how seedy it was about 15 years before I got into it. That they said there were bombings attached to people who were trying to control the pinball business in Seattle.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I definitely need to read this article.
Yeah. There were bombings around the city in the early 1960s because of these wannabe gangsters who wanted to control the Seattle pinball scene.
Well, and you know probably that pinball wasn't even legal until, I believe, 1977, I'm thinking, or 72, one of those in the mid-70s. It wasn't even legal until then.
Well, it was legal in, when did I get hooked? 74, 73 or 4.
Okay, okay.
That's when I got hooked.
Yeah, I can't quite remember the year, but yeah, it was illegal for some time, which was because people thought it was a game of gambling and not chance.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. And we all know that it's very much a game of skill. I need to make a comeback.
Yeah.
I used to be really good.
I'm telling you, Dory, we should go out and start, you know, playing some pinball together.
I know. I need something.
8-Ball Deluxe.
8-Ball Deluxe is specifically mentioned in this article.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's your game.
That's my game. That's the one. Yeah. Sink the 8-Ball. But, I'm telling you, I was 12 years old when I started the 10th grade. And, you know,
wait a minute. What?
Yeah, I was 12 years old when I was a high school sophomore. And you know, I was supposed to, have some brains.
You did. I just can imagine. Oh, my gosh. No wonder you were just this little hustler.
And then one block north of Ballard High School, a place opened up called the Corner Cafe.
Uh-huh.
And it was just that. It was a little lunch counter, but they had about, 10, 15 pinball machines. And the high school kids would go up there and smoke. And we'd listen to, there'd always be a lot of Heart and a lot of Aerosmith.
This is one of the playing. Old Zesto's Burgers, is it?
No. Okay. No, this is north of Ballard High.
Okay.
And I was just addicted, and I spent every penny. I was working then, and I would spend every spare penny on pinball, and then
because you're competitive. I mean, this is
but the thing was, and this is where it gets seedy. We knew my buddies and I knew all the. So when I was 13, that's when my friends who were 16 could start driving. And so we knew all the 24-hour pinball places. The Doghouse had a couple of machines in its entranceway. And then there was a restaurant, and you had to go down a flight of stairs, and I think it was on Piner Pike, called Ben Paris. And I believe it was 24-hour, and they had a couple of pinball machines. And then, this is going to sound so pathetic, but this is just a glimpse of my childhood. The Greyhound bus terminal had a couple of pinball machines, and it, of course, was open 24 hours. So we knew, and we would go at 1 in the morning.
I mean, I'm saying, did you sleep?
No. But 1 in the morning, I'd be going to the Greyhound bus terminal to play pinball when I was 13. It's just, I can't even begin to fathom how different my life was back then. But anyway, it's a good piece in the Pacific Magazine of the Seattle Times. So, and yes, we'll go. So where will we go play? when we go out?
Well, Vera's, the spot in Ballard that used to be the breakfast joint, now reopened by the dude's son as a nighttime pizza place. They actually have 8-Ball Deluxe among their game, the machines they have.
Okay. Yeah, I need to ease back in with a game that I know.
Sure.
Okay.
Plays really well, Dory.
Okay. Love it. All right. Okay, let's get to the Fastest 15. I'm all fired up now to play some pinball. Fastest 15, a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package. So yesterday we talked about the ridiculous outcry over this Peloton ad where a very fit, very thin.
You got to admit, that's a ridiculous commercial. Now I have seen it. It's ridiculous. Come on.
It's not good, but it's nothing. It's not a good commercial.
Want them to pull the ad because there's an outroar.
They're not pulling the ad. They're playing a lot.
Well, like I said, I've saw it a million times, and as I admitted yesterday, in a very platonic way, I think the wife in the ad, wife and mom, I think she's stunning.
I know.
I like...
You made that clear.
I like watching the commercial, but she's rail thin, and her husband gives her an exercise bike, which, you know, usually doesn't go over well. And let's face it.
Unless she asked for it.
Yeah, maybe she wanted to just work on her cardiovascular fitness.
Right.
I
bought one of those.
Here's a little bit of it.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
He has her covering her eyes as he unveils his gift to her.
Now.
A Peloton? Give it up for our first time riders.
Okay, then she takes a bunch of selfie videos of her first ride, getting up at 6 in the morning, her first week.
First ride. I'm a little nervous, but excited. Let's do this. 5 days in a row. You surprised?
I am. 6 a.m. Yay.
Rising with the sun.
That was totally worth it.
Let's go race in Boston. 50 rides.
A year ago, I didn't realize how much this would change me. Thank you.
This holiday?
And they, of course, filmed the whole commercial in the same day. And she started at about 112 pounds. And if she rides Peloton every day for a year, she'd probably be about 110. It just wouldn't make any difference at all with her.
Except that muscle weighs more than
exactly.
Okay. Anyway.
Peloton, have we checked the stock price for today? Can you get today's closing price? Peloton lost $942 million in one day in its stock value as backlash over sexist holiday ad sends stock tumbling nearly 10%. And by the way, this is junk news, too, because I can't believe that the fact that this ad is trending and everybody's talking about it, that knocked the... And the stock market was off a couple hundred points
day. Traders betting against Peloton made $80 million.
Well, if you're lucky enough to... Jeez, I could have shorted Peloton when I first saw the ad. But, if they had put a woman who was overweight as the wife in the commercial, they would have gotten hammered even worse for body shaming. And so they had to put somebody super thin and fit already in the commercial. But its stock fell 9% yesterday. Analysts attributed the drop to negative publicity over the ad. Do we know what it did today?
It closed down 0.52 or 1.
It's 52 cents a share, but you know what? It's in after hours trading, it's actually going up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Silly. So in other words, it's short-lived.
Just silly. Okay, next in the Fastest 15, Russell Wilson has been just killing it on the field for the Seattle Seahawks. And now he has a murder in his camp. O.J. Simpson just released a Twitter video where the double murderer, unconvicted, where he talked about what a fan O.J. is of Russell Wilson of the Seahawks.
But watching that game last night, something came to me. I attended my first professional game, 49ers, in 1957, 62 years ago.
Was that funny?
Since that time, of course, I played 11 years in the NFL. I've worked the sidelines. I've been worked in the studio.
I murdered two people.
I've watched football. I have never, ever seen a player more valuable to his team winning than Russell Wilson. The man has been incredible. Now, going into last night, I had Lamar Jackson as my leader for MVP. Nobody gives you more oohs and ahs and oh my gods than Lamar. But after last night, I got to say these two guys are dead even. And the next 4 weeks are going to tell us who's MVP. Also thought that you want to talk about going to 18 games? Guess what? You already got teams that are hopelessly out of it. And if you went to 18 games, you would have that situation with 4, 5, and 6 games left to play. Bad for football. I'm just saying. Take care.
Who's he talking to?
Us.
Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's making a Twitter video.
Okay. What an annoying human being. Next in the Fastest 15... I didn't have a chance to get to any of these cuts yesterday, but the woman who says that she was trafficked for sex while underage by Jeffrey Epstein, and specifically, she was made to sleep with Prince Andrew. Her name is Virginia Roberts, and she did a devastating interview with the BBC a couple of nights ago. And there's some who think that this could possibly, and it won't, because the monarchy is like its own cult in England, but it's starting to really tear apart the faith people have when it produces just horrible human beings like Prince Andrew. And she says that it all started with a dance. She was just either 16 or 17, depending on which date she recalls. When she was made to date Prince Andrew.
Asked me to dance. He is the most hideous dancer I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it was horrible. And this guy was sweating all over me. Like, his sweat was, like, it was raining basically everywhere. And I was just, like, grossed out from it. But I knew I had to keep him happy because that's what Jeffrey and Ghislaine would expect from me.
So sad and so disgusting. And she says, of course, he had that bizarre interview where he denied it legal sense, but he wouldn't absolutely deny it. He said, yeah, you can't prove that that picture is real of me and her. He didn't say, I didn't take a picture with her. He said, you can't prove it's real. And she said, of course, he's going to deny it.
People on the inside are going to keep coming up with these ridiculous excuses, like his arm was elongated, or the photo was doctored, or he came to New York to break up with Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, come on. I'm calling BS on this, because that's what it is. He knows what happened. I know what happened. And there's only one of us telling the truth, and I know that's me.
And Virginia Roberts wants to remind people this is not just a sex story.
I implore the people in the UK to stand up beside me, to help me fight this fight, to not accept this as being okay. This is not some sordid sex story. This is a story of being trafficked.
And she recalls specific conversations, too.
We're having tea, and Andrew's talking about Fergie, which is his ex-wife at that point, and Ghislaine's bad-mouthing Fergie as well, and Epstein's just socially awkward, so I think he's just laughing about everything.
And they did re-interview Prince Andrew, and he said that he probably did not buy her a drink.
I'm convinced that I was never in tramps with her. There are a number of things that are wrong with that story. One of which is that I don't know where the bar is in tramps. I don't drink. I don't think I've ever bought a drink in Tramp whenever I was there.
Yeah, what a disgusting human being he is. And then we got word yesterday of how many trips both Bill and Hillary Clinton, it was even more. There'd previously been reported that Bill Clinton had been on his airplane that they dubbed the Lolita Express 26 times, but now they've upgraded that number with some more records that have come out.
about Bill and Hillary. And speaking of Hillary, you know what we found out about Hillary today?
What's that?
She's not a lesbian.
Really?
Yeah.
Was anyone questioning that?
Well, she was on Howard Stern's show this morning. She did a long interview. I listened to part of it when I was driving in. She was on for a long, long time. But one of the things that he asked her, and this is why I think Howard Stern is the best, because he gets really good A-list guests, and then he will ask them things that everybody else is afraid to ask. Hillary says that she does like men and that she has never even been tempted by a lesbian affair.
And he was so handsome. He was really handsome.
Really?
Really handsome. Yeah, he looked like a Greek god. He was really handsome.
No kidding.
She's talking about Bill here.
No.
She's Greek god.
About yeah.
Who?
She's talking about the man she loved before Bill.
Oh, this is the guy
I was
before
say,
Bill?
Greek god.
Oh. So, wait, she dated a Greek god before Bill?
Yes.
Whoa. Okay.
He's very attractive.
Lou, I don't know. I'd listen to you.
Well, contrary to what you may hear, I actually like men.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's the other thing.
That's the other thing.
That's the other thing. Women
right?
friends.
Yeah. Raise your right hand. Yeah. You've never had a lesbian affair.
Never. Never even been tempted. Thank you very much.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
But that's the thing. If you have strong relationships with women, friendships.
I do.
And
I
then,
do.
You know, and guys can pal around all they want, and that doesn't cause
right.
suspicion.
Right.
But
right.
when women do it, all of a sudden there might be something to
everything
look at.
We do can yeah. cause suspicion, yeah. apparently.
So there you go. Not a lesbian.
Interesting. Well, she actually volunteered it.
She's
she didn't
the
even,
one who brought it up.
Yeah. She. Yeah. The funny thing is that they said that men don't come under suspicion. I think men would tell you, well, you know, like when you have a really close friendship, don't a lot of people think, oh, well, what's the deal?
I guess if they're single, yes. If they're single men, I would say I could think of somebody that, yes, that happens with.
Who?
I'm not naming names.
Somebody here?
But there's somebody specific that my roommate and I talk about often and we question because so many guy friends, never any girlfriends. And I will say, I'm a single female and I get it often as well.
I bet I know who you're talking
about. See, that's what, yeah, it doesn't just go one way. I say it goes.
Yeah.
I mean, so what's wrong with having a really good friendship?
I wouldn't know.
Why would, just get out.
Not a very good friendship. But anyway, so that's the breaking news today. Hillary, not a lesbian. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Coming up next, it is Wednesday. That means it's Hump Day with Hewart. And that is next on the Dory Monson Show.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
It's hump day with Hewart.
Blue in it, check. Brown, 24, razor. Hot.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. With a 12s, here the Hawks.
Play fake to Penny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline, reaching up, making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
It is Wednesday afternoon, hump day with Hewart. Brock Hewart. 710 ESPN and Fox Sports joins us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
What a wild week. Huh?
It has been. I don't even know what our lead topic is. Seahawks on Monday night or the Huskies having their head coach Chris Peterson step down? Why don't we start with that?
Yeah.
Because I've talked about the Seahawks a lot. I still want to talk with you about the Seahawks. But that was a surprise. And you and I talked about Chris Peterson a week ago and why he was struggling this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you had your thoughts. Were you shocked when you heard that he was stepping down?
Mm-mm.
You weren't?
Nope. I was at the dental office. I had a little dental double date with my wife. I had our teeth cleaned. Waited through the whole football season
to do that. Mm-hmm. You guys go and get your teeth cleaned together?
We did. Yeah, Molly planned that. It's not normal. But
that is one of the most adorable things I've ever heard in my life.
Yep, and my dentist is my buddy Graham, who's down in Federal Way. So we had a long hour car drive and got to catch up on life and got our teeth cleaned. And I came out and I said to Molly, I said, uh-oh, I got 30 text messages. Like, uh-oh, what? Something happened, right? I have no idea what happened. Well, something happened while we got our teeth cleaned. And what happened was Chris Peterson decided to step down and resign, and everyone just kind of went crazy, where is this coming from? I knew he was not long for this brand of college football. I knew he was not long for this job in this current brand of college football. I didn't necessarily think it would be after this year, but I knew it would be in the very near future. And the fact that he pulls the trigger now is A, not shocking, and B, is quite a testament to leave 20-some million dollars on the table and go, yep, not for me.
Yeah. And so is the reason, what I've been trying to piece together, is he wanted to get his OKGs, the OK guys, and the pressure was on that you can't win a national championship with all good character guys. And if you want to be a national champion, you got to compromise some of your values in who you go after. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair summation
of
it?
I don't think that's the biggest chunk. And OKGs are our kind of guys.
Our kind of guys.
Yeah, our kind of high character guys. And they may be 3-star guys. They don't have to be 5-star guys. Yeah, I think that's part of it. There's no question. I also think in order to beat Ohio State or Alabama or those teams, you have to market and sell yourself. And last year, he did this 15-minute like infomercial, which all those other guys do. It showed him on his boat, a day in the life of the program, and it was all this stuff. And it's everything that's not Chris Peterson. You know, that's just not who he is. He's not a self-marketer. He's not a self-promoter. Dory, I had a coach this year on the college football road that knew Chris and said, you know what? He never wanted to be a head coach. That was just not his makeup. He never desired. He didn't want to climb over people. He didn't want to self-promote. He didn't have this enormous ego. He didn't ever want any for any of that. But he ended up going to Boise, which was the perfect spot where he could recruit 2- and 3-star kids, where he didn't have to worry about transfer portals, where he didn't have to kiss people's butt, where he didn't have to, you know, play this recruiting game, where he didn't have to cheat, which is, you know, starting to come into the Pac-12 world. Some of the SEC world is coming into the Pac-12 world. Some of those coaches have come out of there, and they just do things differently down there. And that's not him. And then throw on the fact that, you know, what's going to be coming in the years to come of paying for players' likeness and guys starting to get paid and do all of that. And I just think he looked in the mirror and said, this ain't for me.
Yeah.
Like, this job is no longer for me. The structure of this job is no longer for me. I'm worn down. I don't need to do this anymore, and I'm going to get out now and allow the guy behind me that's much more equipped and much more built in Jimmy Lake for this present day and age of college football.
You're much closer to the alums than I. How much pressure is there from the Tyee Club, from those guys at the U? Because, I mean, here's a guy, he was the second winningest active coach in all of college football. Better winning percentage than Nick Saban at Alabama. Now, he built a lot of that at Boise State, but he was still, you know, above, you know, 667 with the Huskies. So how much pressure was there for, you know, the upper campus and the boosters?
Oh, a ton. Absolutely. When you go and win the division or win the conference twice and you go to a Rose Bowl, and now it's like, okay, that's great. And we love you for this. And you're the next coming of Don James, right? And you're the closest thing since Don James has left the program to being like the Dog Father. And you take us to a Rose Bowl and a Fiesta Bowl and a playoff game. Now you got to win. Right now you've taken us there to the promised land, but now you got to finish the deal. And in order to finish the deal, you got to play the game in a way that I don't think Chris Peterson wants to play it, nor was comfortable. And as he said in his press conference this week, he said, you know, this really hit him when he went to the Rose Bowl a year ago and didn't enjoy a lick of it. Hmm. Right?
That's sad. That's really sad.
That is so sad. And then this year was a grind, and it was the week of the Apple Cup that he had made this decision. And the day after, it had told the AD, nobody else knew. This was not coming. This is not something that it was leaked anywhere else. But I think that is that just kind of revelation, and credit to him, Dory, to instead of saying, you know what, I'll just kind of keep doing the job and I'll keep collecting and I'll make my $4 or $5 million and see, you know, the whole length of this contract. Instead, it's like, no, if this is not for me and there's somebody here that's been with me for 6 years that's ready to do this, I don't think it's too dissimilar to Bob Stoops at Oklahoma.
Right.
He did this in his mid-50s. People were like, you're crazy. And he turned it over to Lincoln Riley, who'd been on his staff and a younger guy that was more equipped to handle this kind of day and age of this relentless nature of the pressure and the schedule and the expectation and all that comes with a job like that.
Well, and I do give him credit. I agree with you, because he had two options besides the one he chose. And that was, like you just said, go through the motions, collect a paycheck, play it out, or compromise his morals and values and be something that he's not.
Yes.
And that's There are too many people who do that these days.
Sure.
And the fact that he chose, and look, he's got all the financial security. He's made enough money that he can make decisions for completely non-financial reasons.
Correct. The most can't.
Yep. Yeah, and that's something that most of us do not have. That's a luxury most of us
do not. And the other reality, Dory, is there's very few that can do what Jimmy Lake will be now tasked to do. That Pete Carroll did it in the 2000s. Right. And he was able to just be this puppeteer, and he's still doing it in the NFL, but just be able to manage all of that and manage those relationships and manage players and manage, you know, runners for agents already at the college level and manage how am I going to handle all this fame and notoriety and these players and all that. There's very few that can do it.
Yeah.
Nick Saban does it. He does it differently than Pete. He's got a staff of about 30 in Alabama, huge staff that helps. Dabo can do it at Clemson. The guy, Ryan Day, is following in the footsteps of Urban Meyer, but it is a short list of guys that can really live in that world and seem to handle it really well.
How about those Seahawks? 10-2 Seahawks tied for the best record in the entire NFL.
It's just crazy.
Isn't it something?
Every game is one possession. They played 12 games. You know what their scoring differential is? Like plus minus, how many points they've outscored their opponents. I think the 49ers that are 139 plus 139 at 10-2. You know where the Seahawks are?
Much less.
Plus 36.
Yeah.
It's about a field goal a game. Every game is basically a one possession game. And this year, Russell, I think, is 9-1 in those one possession games in this team. Like they're built for it, but I think it's getting to the point. And I don't know if you believe this or not, but I think it's getting to the point that more important than even their own locker room believing they're going to win, the team they're facing plays in these games.
Great point.
And they're going, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, if you talk to the analytics guys and they look at that scoring differential and they say these guys are frauds, they're 7-5. But there is something to be said about, you know, what Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson have not only bought into themselves but sold to all 52 other guys in that locker room. And that is that Russell Wilson in his postgame on Monday night said they have a winning gene. And I think they believe that. I think they now think that winning is part of their DNA. And you have to be kind of a mad scientist to alter DNA in adults. I think they've done that.
But when you've done it like they have, and Russell is the winningest quarterback through 8 years, right? And they've had winning records all 8 years now, like this incredible streak. I think you also get to the point where, yes, all 53 in that building believe it, and they're buying into their roles. And I love that Jerron Brown was active on Monday. He sat for weeks inactive, but in a game where they needed him to block, hey, listen, we're going to run the ball against the Vikings. You're going to be active, and you're going to come down and block safeties and linebackers. Great, sign me up.
Yeah.
I can be a part of this winning thing. I think that's all real important. But when push comes to shove in the fourth quarter, and the opponent on the other side's like, dang, man, here we go again. And these guys believe it, and they're equipped, and we don't really have that. Yeah. Like, we've not been there like they have, or their quarterback has, or their head coach has, and they just keep doing it. And they just, like, get to the final rounds, and they know how to win.
Yeah.
And most of the teams they're facing, and even here down the stretch, you know, that's not the Rams. That's not the Panthers. That's not the Cardinals. And on a Monday night against the 49ers, wasn't the San Francisco 49ers either.
They have the winning gene. So do you, Brock Huard. You have the winning gene.
No, I don't.
Hey, next time, I don't know if you do it every 4 or 6 months. Next time you and Molly go get your teeth cleaned, can we make it a threefer? Can I go with you guys?
Well, it's every 6 months.
Okay.
We're not a four.
All
we're
right.
A six.
Okay. Can I go with you guys?
And no cavities.
I got to have nitrous to get my teeth cleaned, though. and they got to pump it up to 10.
That laughing gas.
Sure. Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah. And then on the way home, I'll just be in the back seat. Okay. Suzanne, you guys will enjoy
Suzanne, is this how he always is? Why, yes.
Brock Huard, you can hear him periodically on 710 ESPN Seattle. You've got the Brock and Salk podcast and on Fox Sports. Thank you for coming by.
Such a blast.
Okay. And we got lots more straight ahead. It's the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on.
Rolls on. Oh, Kid Rock, after his profane rant on stage, his bar is closing now. I'm going to play that for you as part of the Big Lead at 2 and all the craziness locally coming up next.